Welcome to The Lobbying Show, a podcast about the people in government relations, how they got into it, what their jobs entail, what works, and what doesn't. I'm your host, Jim O'Brien. So happy new year, everyone. We have a new show for you today with Joshua Haberski. Joshua is the Assistant Vice President at the Independent Community Bankers of America, ICBA. But that is not why we sat down with him. We sat down with Joshua because of his expertise in grassroots. Joshua founded and chairs the Grassroots Professional Network, an educational professional development organization with over 27,000 members. It's really incredible. And it's an organization that brings people who work in grassroots together to better develop their skills, find out about new products, and network. Joshua founded it, and he chairs it. But that is not the only hat that he wears. He's also an adjunct professor at the Graduate School of Political Management at GW, also a contributing editor at Campaigns and Elections. And he does all of that in addition to his day job, as we mentioned, at ICBA. But his coolest job was probably that he did grassroots work at one point in his career for the American Motorcycle Association. And we will hear about that and hear about many other things that he has done. We really enjoyed sitting down with Joshua. And at this time of year, being January, the state capitals across the country are beginning to get a buzz with activity. Many of the legislative sessions will be starting. Governors and legislators will be sworn in. Committee assignments will be given. Chairs will be selected. And the sessions will begin. So for the next 6 months, for all the lobbyists and state government people working at companies, at the clients, the next 6 months will be very busy. The companies, the people who work in-house overseeing their state lobbyists will be spending a lot of time in airports and on planes. And the lobbyists at state capitals will obviously be busy in the next 6 months doing most of their work. So it's back to school time for the state lobbyists in the state capitals. And we wish them all the best. And we hope you enjoy our kickoff interview for 2019 with Joshua. Joshua Haberski. Enjoy it. So today we are back in Washington, D.C. at the Washington, D.C. Denton's office. It's a beautiful office at 19th and K Street. We love being here at Denton's. And today we are very excited, really we are, to sit down with Joshua Haberski. Joshua has done many things and wears many different hats. He is a nationally recognized grassroots and advocacy leader and really thought leader. He is Assistant Vice President at the Independent Community Bankers of America, which, because we're in Washington, D.C., has to have an acronym. It is ICBA. Joshua, great to be here. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for inviting me on the show. I'm very excited to get right into it.
Well, we are excited to talk to you. And I would recommend to anyone who is listening to check out Joshua's LinkedIn page, because you've done many different things, and it's really informative about who you are. So first, let's get into the Grassroots Professional Network. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
This is probably the greatest accident of my life. I had started my first job in government relations was at the American Motorcyclists Association. It's a member association, had no professional development budget, and I had never run a grassroots campaign. I worked in grad school in like public affairs, but never run a campaign. So I simply needed to learn how to do my job, and there was nothing available out there that was free. So I started inviting 5-6 people. I got my former employer, Beekeeper Group, to host a brown bag lunch at their office, and it just snowballed from 10 people at our first event. We've had as many as 1,200, and we do about 60 events a year now.
So you did this where you would invite people into the office to try to figure out how to do grassroots and how to network or
Yeah, it was really to learn how to do my job. I stopped doing the one-off coffees and cold calls to the Realtors and Restaurants Association who were doing it well. And it was just to like, hey, how do I do this, you know?
And how many members do you have today?
27,000.
That's incredible. I mean, it's really amazing. And you have, tell us about, you have a number of events throughout the year, right?
Yep.
And tell us about some of those.
So we've done, a variety of different events. We launched a regional series, so we go to different parts of the country. Just last month, we launched a satellite in Europe. And we did our first event in Brussels, but it'll be based more in Barcelona and London. So we're really trying to do, you know, a lot of different things, all on grassroots advocacy communications. I think my favorite event this year was National Advocacy Day. Mm-hmm. We work with Congressman Krishnamoorthy to designate a day where you celebrate the right to petition government for grievances and advocate for things. That never existed. We threw this big swanky party at a place that, you know, I was so excited to be there, let alone hosting it. And we needed to pick a day. So I talked to my leadership team and stuff like that. Well, you know, we want to do it in the summer. So we selected my birthday. So now I have the best birthday party.
That's
a holiday.
How many people attended?
350.
Wow. And so wait, so the network is for grassroots professionals.
Yes.
So why do I, as a grassroots professional, based in Kansas City, is it across the country? Why do I join the network? Is it for business development, or is it for more learning the latest work product that I can be putting out?
I think it's a complement to a lot of the other networking groups that are out there. We have a webinar series. We have, I do a ton of different.
So that's
writings,
educational. That's educational.
But
so then, So you're offering. If I'm part of this network, you're going to have a webinar on Jim. There's a new tool to reach people in a better format in this digital XYZ, and we're going to have a webinar next Tuesday at noon. And as part of our network, you can sign up and watch that webinar and become a better grassroots professional in doing so.
Yes. Yeah. And we've had a partnership with CQ Roll Call.
Oh. Okay.
With that, so I've done 35 webinars or so on pretty much every topic, soup to nuts, on advocacy, how to do a fly-in, how to create a content calendar. I have one coming up next week on how to do an annual report for grassroots advocacy. So we kind of cover everything. And we just renewed the contract with Fiscal Note and CQ for another additional 2 years. So that's something that will continue.
And what's that relationship? What are you doing for them?
So it'll be webinars and then live events and then some content pieces. So we've done a few where, and it's been amazing this year. I think we've done some short form stuff, long form stuff, but we've released reports with like APCO and Crowd Scout, and they've launched products at these events that they're partnering with us. I think our strongest resource to the community is being able to find the win-wins for everyone.
So it's mostly then professional development.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
networking,
it's
with your colleagues. Yep. and your yeah.
90% free too. That is a unique part of it too. We have a few partnerships like with campaigns and elections where there is cost to go to, yep, the conference. But if you want to attend 10 events in DC and watch 10 webinars, that's going to be completely free to you.
And when did it start? What year did you start it?
2015.
And that was when you were at the Motorcycle Association.
Yes.
Which has, it has to be one of the coolest associations. I don't even ride motorcycles, and it sounds cool. Are you a motorcycle guy?
I'm not. And it was one of those things where it was available, and like I seized the moment. And I remember looking back on it, I did my first like GPN event, and it was called the Sons of Advocacy and like the Sons of Anarchy. So we had
great.
Two of us on there, and like that type of kind of, you know, cheesy, but like,
yeah, it's catchy.
It's catchy. And yeah. I think our disruptive marketing has been a way for us to grow, because people are like, well, this is a little different than what is out there.
When you say we, you meant the Motorcycle Association.
The grassroots professional network in that. But it's really, it's complimentary. I've interjected, I think, more so than a lot of folks, my own personality into GPN as well as whatever my day job has been.
And then how much of your time a week, what percentage of your time is spent on GPN? Because you also have a day job.
Yeah. I think it's, one of those things that varies. If we have a couple of events, I have an amazing team. We have a 50-person advisory board. And then recently we just named a president, Joe Franco, who's the vice president at Leading Age, to kind of run all of our operations. It's getting too big at this point.
To do it on a volunteer basis. So you have staff.
So we're going into a staff model this coming year. We've had no staff up until this point.
And the 27,000, that's individuals?
That's individuals.
How many companies is that?
I mean, we really haven't done that analysis.
Okay.
Despite the fact that we're a large list, we haven't been that sophisticated, and we haven't been, like, profit-driven. It's not been one of those things. I know that if, Jim, you tell me I want to do an event with a lobbying show next week, I will be able to triage and get the resources that are needed and not post a profit, but we could get 200 people at your event next week.
That's incredible. And you obviously are doing something right, because it has just grown tremendously and people are talking about it. Clearly you're doing something right. And clearly you're meeting a need.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one where, you know, you need that content. People that are trying to get to the next level, there's a lot of folks that, you know, really, grassroots used to be the stepping stone of being a lobbyist. You started out, you know, working as a grassroots specialist, grassroots coordinator, and hopefully eventually you got to become a direct lobbyist. And I think we've seen that shift where you're starting to see more assistant vice presidents, vice presidents, even senior vice presidents of advocacy and grassroots, and it's becoming parallel to lobbying. You're seeing some of the spending shift over to public affairs, and I think in that shift we hit it at the right time, and that's where there were about five networks that sprung up right around the time that we did, and the key that I think differentiates us from those, we worked with the media companies and we worked with the universities from the beginning. So we had instant legitimacy. Nobody was questioning, well, you know, I don't really know what they're about. You know, is this worth my time? We have, you know, CEOs of companies and interns in the same room because it was under the GSPM banner or the, you know, the Hill banner.
Yeah, I think you're selling yourself a little bit short. I think it also had to do with the fact that you were very focused on the quality of the product and the content you were working on, and your goal was authentic. You were really trying to be a network, a professional network for grassroots people, and there was a need for educational webinars and whatever, and you met that need, and you didn't use it as a mechanism for business development or giving yourself a second salary or whatever, and I really think that's why you've grown. But That's my opinion.
I appreciate that. And I think that, you know, the folks that are looking to get involved and sponsor and host events with us, I think that they appreciate those comments.
Boy, the business, it just changes. I mean, it's just incredible, the changes that go on year to year. Is it hard to keep up?
Absolutely. I think on the technology side of things, that is where I'm the most confused and, like, I don't know what's going on. I just did a piece in Campaigns and Elections about the technology shifts of this year. And we took a part out of the article, and I'm going to do a second article coming up on the questions in advocacy technology for 2019. And I think that is going to be a very interesting piece, because you could see your first publicly traded company in this space. You could see, you know, the continued influx of cash. There's market consolidation, and then just the different partnerships. Who's working with who? If we lose a client, are our VC firms going to be, you know, calling on our door? Is that much of a problem? I've never seen so much venture capital money in this market than the current time.
Interesting. Now, You mentioned the Motorcycle Association, and you also mentioned Beekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Beekeeper.
So Beekeeper Group was a public affairs firm. They're still doing very well. I think they're one of the more creative agencies. And it was a perfect way. I was working full-time at Beekeeper Group, going to grad school at Georgetown when I first moved here.
What were you going to grad school for?
American government.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was looking back on what it was about 5 years ago, not that long ago, but I was in intern housing with two other roommates in a one-bedroom apartment. I had the bunk beds just trying to live, you know, pay the Georgetown tuition and all of that stuff. Working there full time, and I had a part time job with the DC government on the weekends. I did all the liquor licenses
permitting. Did you overlap with Stephanie Reich at Stateside?
I did not.
Okay. All right. She was a guest on the show.
But I was doing like permitting and liquor licenses for like the National Park area and the new wharf complex.
Okay.
So learn that development. But at Beekeeper Group, I had, you know, 40 different clients that, you know, range from, you know, business community to progressive groups to conservative groups. And I mean, it was, they're a nonpartisan firm. And that's where I got a lot of experience of working in the trade association and association model. And I knew instantly once I got the graduate degree, and they helped me get my next job. But I wanted to work in-house and run a program, and, you know, the rest is history.
That's great. Now, when we were sitting down, you mentioned some of the current stuff you're doing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, it's, as you mentioned, truly wear a lot of different hats. ICBA, we're very active on a lot of different fronts.
So tell the listeners a little bit about ICBA.
Yeah, so it's the largest trade association for community banks. We're very active on issues that you wouldn't even expect, like the farm bill and agricultural lending. This year we had monumental legislation, bipartisan legislation pass, Senate Bill 2155.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a great moment in my career. I had never gotten something over the finish line at the federal level, especially in this political environment.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to, you know, work with a great team. I was running a lot of the grassroots campaigns for it. And 2 weeks after that bill passed, I got my promotion to assistant vice president. So, I mean, that was a good moment.
That's great. There are not many people who have passed legislation recently in D.C. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the tough moments or some of the bright spots of getting, what are some of the keys to getting that done?
I think that the tough moment to answer that question first was we had our convention in Las Vegas, and I'm working our PAC auction, you know, kind of doing the day-to-day, the notebooks and, you know, getting coffee, all that kind of stuff.
Because
we're an all-hands-on-deck team, you know, so I have all these responsibilities as part of convention. I was speaking, doing an advocacy training at convention, but the bill was being debated in the Senate, and like I had to go and like working on a computer here for this project and working on a computer here, completely different projects, but we're sending action alerts and the time difference. I got two watches on trying to figure out. It was truly like a war room mentality. Like I remember the old days, you know, in college working on campaigns at going the door-to-door level, and then going to the war room, and you see the campaign managers and all that, and you're like, oh, I wonder what that's like to be in the seat there. And that was a good experience to see that go. And then I remember, I think the best part of it was, you know, we all gathered in. This is a campaign that we had something called the Plan for Prosperity, which, you know, we packaged our legislative agenda together. And it was a 2-year campaign. I started, I think, 2 months when we started really ramping up the Plan for Prosperity. And the ultimate outcome was, you know, Senate Bill 2155 from that. So I get to be a part of this campaign from the beginning. But if you spend 2 years of your life on something, you know, it feels special. So we had everybody huddled around watching the TV as the final person in the House passed that. It was just like a sigh of relief and were like, wow, we actually did something.
You know? That's incredible. And were you at ICBA when, I think it was maybe before your time, when they were working on Dodd-Frank?
So, yeah, that was definitely before my time.
Okay.
But, you know, there were a lot of – ICBA has a great longevity in terms of the staff. So we have experienced people that have been there for 35-plus years and to see their face. And then, you know, not only my colleagues, but our bankers, they're just – I mean, I've worked with a variety of different groups, but they are the salt of the earth people. And to see the reaction from them of getting some relief and being able to, you know, lend to their local communities. There's community banks out there that's the only option for people in rural communities. They don't have that. So, you know, the community exists because of the community banks able to put those things together.
And then how many staff do you have here in D.C.?
I think we're at, you know, about 80. We have an office in Sauk Center, Minnesota.
Okay.
That's kind of our processing and data.
But about 80 here in D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big operation. And tell us about now your day-to-day responsibilities currently.
So, I mean, it's advocacy communications, any mass campaigns that we're running that are directed to Hill staff, and then all of our grass tops and grassroots. We do creative campaigns. It's funny because, you know, I see a lot
creative
of...
Creative campaigns, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, we have two...
Give us an example.
Two in particular. Some of your listeners might be familiar with the Durbin Amendment, you know, the interchange, and it's the retailers fighting the banks and the credit card companies and who's responsible for that. And, you know, I'm one of those people that likes to look and use whatever tactic is best, no matter if it's old school, new school. And we went back to direct mail and we had an infographic printed on receipt paper because it involves interchange.
Right.
So like Retail. This big receipt, like CVS size receipt paper, it had the cost, it had the barcode on it, it had our logo as like the top. And at the bottom, we customized, we put the phone numbers of the members of Congress that we needed to call, and it was before a key committee vote. And we mailed it out to our bankers, our CEOs, and on
And how many CEOs do you have?
So we have 5,600 member banks. You know, so we mailed this out, but on the letter we put receipt enclosed. So like everybody was like, "What the heck did I buy?" And they all opened them up.
Oh my God.
And we got the calls were made. It was disruptive. And,
oh, that is great.
It was a really creative campaign.
That is pretty good.
So
that's pretty good.
And we were successful in getting a vote out of committee. Of course, you know, it hasn't changed overall, but that was a small victory and one where we're like, all right.
I think you might get a few clients out of people who hear that. That is very creative.
Yeah,
very creative. And then tell us about your, is it Founders? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Founder Strategies, you know, we started something. It was a firm that I had when I was in college.
Okay.
And my roommate, Stefan Gochev, and I were like, well, you know, we need a job. And I was going to college.
Actually, you didn't really need a job because you finished school in what, like 2.5 years?
2.5 years.
So the fact that you said you need a job, which we're going to get into after you talk about Founders, we're going to go back and talk about where you grew up and all that. He, for our listeners, he graduated in 2.5 years, so I can't imagine that he needed a job. And I know you went to Washington and Jefferson College. So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
So we started this firm as like a way where, you know, there wasn't much available. I didn't have a car, and we're 45 minutes to an hour outside of Pittsburgh, so not much around. You know, wanted to work on campaigns, love politics, and the head of the political science department was like, well, why don't you work on some campaigns? And so I was kind of the business development CEO. I went to local campaigns. I went to ballot initiatives, people trying to run for school board, any way that we could squeeze, you know, a contract here and there. You know,
do they have ballot initiatives in Pennsylvania?
So they have some local stuff.
Okay.
That was what we were focused on. But we would take folks to the Leadership Institute and some, you know, free training options here in D.C. So I would go to the campaigns and say, hey, I have 10 trained, you know, canvassers. Is there something that we can do? And by the end of it, you know, the 2.5 years that I was there, we worked this founder strategies for 3 cycles. We were the largest employer outside of the college itself and made $300,000 in that time from those local and state races.
While you're in college?
While we were in college.
And is it still active today?
So we resurrected it.
So it was dormant for a while.
It was dormant.
Didn't have enough with ICBA and the Grassroots Professional Network and a few other things like contributing to the Hill and campaigns and elections and teaching at West Virginia University and where's the other one? You're teaching somewhere else too.
So I just ended at West Virginia University and now I moved over to the Graduate School of Political Management.
Of course. Yeah, you clearly don't have enough to do it. We'll get into that in a minute. But go ahead. Finish the founder story.
So with founders, I mean, we kind of resurrected it. We're looking, you know, we have a niche in grassroots, and there's a few people that I've been working with GPN for a while. I've taken a step back in naming Joe Franco the president. So have some time to, you know, take on a grassroots campaign here and there. We're very selective. You know, obviously we don't take anything that would conflict with, you know, ICBA and the day job. So, you know, my favorite clients, the International Premium Cigar and Pipe Retailers Association, I think they pay me more in cigars than they do in anything else. But like working with interesting organizations that we're passionate about. Again, I've been very fortunate to meet a lot of people through GPN, have great mentors, and kind of get to be selective of like who I want to work with a side project here and there. And, you know, it's interesting. I think that we get some people that come to you and you're like, well, I don't know, this isn't the right fit. But if it's an organization where you're like, oh, I think I can do some good work. Right now we're in talks with the Melanoma Research Foundation. And I think, like, you know, healthcare. I did a brief stint at the American Diabetes Association.
Yep.
So in doing this, it was like, well, can I do transportation and health in a little bit because I have that experience of running grassroots for those organizations. And
is your partner working full time at Founders?
No, it works at Booz Allen Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
In the consulting side there.
Okay.
So, again, very different.
So this is a side thing for both of you.
Yep.
Wow.
So
now we've kind of started at the end. So let's go back to the beginning. Just tell us, where'd you grow up? What were you like? What were some of your interests? You know?
So I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
The snowiest city, over 50,000 people. So there's not much to do there in the winter. It's miserably hot in the summer.
But is there any skiing nearby?
There is. Yeah. I'm more of a hockey guy. I love hockey. Grew up as a Sabres fan. My parents are still there.
Okay.
And my parents are really a lot of my motivation. They were never the parents that were, you know, pressure you, you got to do this, you got to do that. It was kind of like, all right, you do whatever you think is best. Their careers in itself were motivation. My dad started out as a prison guard and was the chief of the sheriff's department after a 30-year career. My mom started out as a teacher and is the assistant superintendent currently. So they both 30-year careers in public service, worked their way up and wanted to do more. And they love Erie. I'm trying to get them to move here when they eventually retire. But
Any siblings?
I have one sister. She's in Jacksonville, North Carolina, working for the clerk of courts there, and her husband's a Marine.
Okay. Is she younger or older?
Younger.
So you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest. We were very competitive growing up and still are to some extent. But
so you made your way to Washington and Jefferson. How did you select that college?
They gave me the most money, and it was really my parents' decision. And I'm paying for my school. They're like, oh, well, you got to do this, this, and this. I wanted to go to the University of Michigan. I was all excited to go to the Ford School of Public Policy. And they're just like, all right, well, that's too far, too expensive. And well, then I'm like, I'm picking my grad school no matter what. And I did that in selecting Georgetown and gave up some full ride offers to like Penn State and Georgia for grad school, which which was tough. But I, you know, again, finishing in 2.5 years, I'm like, all right, I will be able to do this, you know, if everything works out.
What was your focus or study or major in college?
Political science, and then I had a minor in history.
Okay.
My goal was to be a political science professor. And then it shifted. I'm like, all right, I see all this stuff about lobbying. I kind of want to, you can have a decent life lobbying. I had no idea what grassroots was, you know, from the beginning. And like, now I'm to the point in my career where I love associations, I love grassroots, and I want to retain grassroots no matter what I do.
Whatever you do.
Yeah.
And you're now... you're teaching on the side. Tell us about your teaching.
Yeah, so I've had probably my top mentor in Washington, D.C. is a guy from name of Mike Fulton.
Okay.
Works for the Asher Agency, runs their public affairs operation. He is Mr. West Virginia, has every connection in West Virginia. And I was networking. I saw, I think it was on LinkedIn, a friend of my mom was teaching at West Virginia University online, a strategic social media class. So I reached out and said, hey, you know, I'm interested. I just got, you know, I'm doing some interesting stuff with social media. I got my graduate degree. Are there any opportunities? And he referred me to Mike, and I had to, you know, meet him and talk about where I was coming from. And as if I got his blessing, I would be in the program. So they gave me my first shot. I think I was the youngest professor ever at WVU because I was 23 at the time, 23, 24, teaching. So I did that for a while. But Mike, not only was he helpful in the teaching side of things, he gave me my first speaking engagement with the American League of Lobbyists, and we did our first article together. And now, fast forward, I've done 70 articles, probably 40 co-published with Mike.
Wow.
And he's done speaking engagements at GPN events. I've done other things for PRSA. That is really like, and we've written things for like the association trends and association focused stuff about how a mentorship should work, where it's not like, Mike, can I get a job? It's more like, hey, here's an idea, here's an opportunity. You take that shot, run with it. But also, you got to come back and deliver as the mentee. And like, I think now I'm sending Mike more opportunities than he is me. And that's just because, you know, doing so many different things.
It's so critical. I can't speak about other businesses, but in this business, it is so critical. You know, that first internship, that first mentor, whether it's a campaign manager or the chief of staff in an office, in your case, a professor. It's just critical to learning the business and gaining some skills and development. That's great. So now you teach somewhere else also, don't you?
So I did a class, it was during the election, on campaigns and special interests for Heidelberg University in Ohio.
Okay.
It was an online program. And then I was at, you know, West Virginia for 3.5 years. I taught 10 or 11 classes.
Online.
Online.
Yep.
And then I finally, and this was after 2 years of lobbying, was able to get a post teaching state and intergovernmental politics in the Graduate School of Political Management. Joe Franco, who's president of GPN, and I are co-teaching this class.
Oh, great.
And I'm very excited about it, you know, first in-person class. And it's funny, though, because, like, I went to Georgetown, and, you know, there's that rivalry, Georgetown, George Washington.
Yeah, so just so the listeners that don't know, The school that you're mentioning is part of GW, part of George Washington.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So, you know, there's that back and forth there. But I think GW, through like anything that I've done with the networking, and they offer us event space all the time. They are the practical program and have been a supporter of mine, you know, starting from the beginning with the Grassroots Professional Network. And they've identified that their staff is incredibly helpful, I think, job placement wise. So I'm proud, even, you know, I love Georgetown and I'll go to the Hoya games and all of that, but I'm proud to associate with GW.
Yeah, and you're clearly excited. That's great. What a great opportunity. And then you also are a contributor or writer with The Hill. And so you've done some writing on the side also?
Yeah. So, with GPN, there was nobody that, you know, in the grassroots space that was like being the advocate for what's going on in the industry, saying like, hey, this is a good thing, this is a bad thing, you know, ethics, responsibility, maybe we shouldn't be flooding the Hill with mass messages. There was research out there and people were coming up with things, but you know, we're a C3 organization with GPN, but I was able through like connections to kind of take the bully pulpit of grassroots in the industry and write and speak and do a lot of different things. So I've done interviews with Sirius XM. I've done, writing for Bloomberg, Huffington Post, The Hill. I've kind of focused everything now. When I stepped back a little bit, which was literally just 6 weeks ago from GPN, I announced that I'm now the contributing editor of Campaigns and Elections magazine.
Wow.
So that is kind of where we're going to have a lot more of advocacy content, because we're not really,
When you say we, who do you mean we?
So
founders?
No, Campaigns and Elections.
Oh, Campaigns and Elections.
Yeah,
okay.
And us. It's one of those things where with the Hill and some of the other publications, I wasn't really writing about current events so much. It was more, you know, here's some best practices and tactics that had some current events in it. Mm-hmm. So I think with CNE being the tactical approach, it's a better fit for that. Occasionally when something pops up, there was an interesting thing in Missouri with a court case that basically said that if you're a nonprofit board member that actively lobbies the state legislature, you have to register as a lobbyist. And that's, you know, that's grassroots lobbying.
Yep.
And you don't have to do that at the federal level. And there's some issues like that will need to be ironed out. And I think that this Congress, there might be a lot more interest taking place around that area of things. And there needs to be a voice that is, you know, all right, this is what the tech vendors think. This is what the industry thinks. And like, we can get people together. I think that's the power of GPN, is like, if we need stakeholders in the room from every tech company, or, you know, 20, 40 representatives of trade associations and corporate grassroots professionals, we can do that to pull the room and say, all right, we're in favor of this, we're not in favor of this, and provide that feedback. And I've done some of that already working with the research groups. So OpenGov Foundation, which is doing a lot on constituent communication, we've convened folks and given them feedback based on that. So
who's driving that wants to have those board members register? What do you think's behind that?
Well, there's some... some people look at grassroots negatively as, you know, astroturf, shadow lobbying,
right,
things like that. And, you know, some of my articles in CNE, if you look back, they take on a lot of the industry that are doing some of these practices. I'm not afraid to call vendors out. I usually don't do it by name, but like the practice itself.
Mm-hmm.
That needs corrected. There are certainly issues. I think Congress is overloaded with communications right now. Mm-hmm. And too many of us in industry are like, well, at the end of the year, I need to match or get more messages sent to the Hill. That's what senior leadership is looking at. Did I blast, the Hill with 100,000 letters on this campaign? And that's not that it's an arms race, and it's an unwinnable arms race for everyone.
Right, right.
And then you'll have Senate offices and House offices shut down their communications because they can't process it,
right.
And then no one wins.
Right. So we have had a few guests that have said that engaging local constituents, having them reach out to their elected officials, is by far the most effective way to get your message, to the elected leaders. Clearly, you would, I think, probably agree with that. So I guess I would ask, do you agree with that? And if someone is listening, what suggestions would you have, short of hiring a grassroots professional, suggestions that for entities trying to engage in a grassroots, are there some simple things that people can do?
Yeah, I certainly agree that it's important. I don't take the 100% holistic approach of like that's the end all be all. I think that if you're going to be successful in government relations, you have to have
it's part of an overall strategy.
The best organizations are in sync with their communications and marketing departments, grassroots, and direct lobbying. When those teams are working together and collaborating, that's when you're getting movement and traction on things. And then some organizations, if you have a political action committee, that is important too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people are, it's kind of like anti-PAC season. That's another trend that I've noticed.
Yes.
With folks not accepting corporate funds.
Yes.
But, a PAC plays an important role in government relations in the American political system. I think simple ways to engage in grassroots or test out, whether your organization can fit in it, starts with your employees. Are you going to get engagement from your employees? So if you're a corporation thinking about starting a coalition of folks or an entity that is grassroots driven, beta test it with some of your employees. If you're sending out stuff and nobody in your organization is going to participate, chances are that you're going to have to spend a lot of money in order to get the general public interested in it. Content, when you create content, that's probably the easiest way to get people interested in grassroots. You can't always ask people to do something. And that's a trend that I still see where it's like, here's an action alert. Let me blast you out. Call Congress, email Congress. It has to be conversation. Here's a resource. You have to provide, whether it's information, updates, make people feel as if they're part of a movement. You don't have your hand out all the time asking for something. So create quality content that's relatable. I think a lot of the time, in grassroots, you have to translate these highly complex things,
down to an elevator speech.
Yeah.
Our
regulatory team and our legislative team, they are incredible experts. But and I can't tell you, the nuts and bolts of, faster payments or some of these complex things that we're working on. But I will sit in those meetings, take notes, process the information, then come up with an infographic. And I mean, we've done things connecting it to going back to school, the Super Bowl, Christmas, Halloween. We do a fun trick or treat campaign on social media where we'll release in the week of Halloween, we'll release one positive fact about community banks and then a trick about one of our competitive associations.
Uh-huh.
So the trick or treat campaign gets a lot of social media traction because it's red meat to our members. I mean, they love when we're blasting.
I.e., are your employees here, your members, how are they receiving this message or this as you were talking about earlier?
There's excitement and enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's a great example.
So, that was the case, in all three organizations. It pulled at a different emotion.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at the Motorcyclists Association, it was more, my right to ride, my land, personal freedom. At the Diabetes Association, I did a one-year stint there, and that was, really impactful of, trying to get people the funding and care that they needed. And we've had some interesting partnerships. We did our fly-in with the NFL Players Association. So we had a NFL player from every team come with our advocates. And that obviously, you know, was good because we were getting C-SPAN and ESPN interviewing our folks on that stuff. And then
that's great.
Community bankers, obviously, it's the impact of the community.
Well, that's very, very helpful. Great advice. For any college students that may be listening, do you have internships in your various organizations, or what suggestions would you have?
For sure. So we're hiring an intern for the Grassroots Professional Network coming up. And then, you know,
and that would be for the summer or January or
For the spring.
For the spring.
For
okay.
The spring. So, and I'm one of the folks that have signed on to the Pay Our Interns movement. I was actually Grassroots Professional Network was one of the original contributors of that. They had a reception, you know, we did the $500 sponsorship of it. I'm a big proponent in that because it's tough, you know. Living in D.C. and having to pay to do that. So
And what about ICBA?
So I'm not sure if we're going to do something along those lines or not.
Okay.
It's one of those to-be-determined things. With founder strategies, there will be opportunities in the summer.
Okay. And so when you say spring, do you mean when the spring semester ends?
When it begins.
When it begins.
So,
okay.
So pretty soon.
So for the spring semester.
Yep.
Got it. Joshua, this has been great. Great to sit down with you. A lot to digest. I have a feeling we're going to be sitting down with you again to go back over some things. We really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Jim. I really appreciate the interview, and I love the work that you guys are doing on the lobbying show. I'm a listener, and it's great to be on the program.
Well, great to have you. Thanks, Joshua. Well, there you have it. Hope you enjoyed the interview. We enjoyed sitting down with Joshua. If you like our podcast and want to help spread the word, the best thing you can do, and it's easy, is to subscribe to our podcast and leave a comment on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. If you want additional insights about our guests or upcoming shows and more, just sign up for the Monday Morning Coffee with The Lobbying Show at our website, thelobbyingshow.com. If you're not already, be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Lobbying Show. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. So there you have it. Hope you enjoy it. Happy New Year, everyone, and good luck this year.